Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Peace Alliance National Monthly Call for November. I'm Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Director for the Peace Alliance, and I'm grateful to all of you for joining us tonight. This has been a rather intense week, I think, for many of us. I'd say if any of us weren't feeling directly emotionally impacted by the election results one way or another, we were probably at least affected by the national dialogue and events since the election, whether on social media or in the news or perhaps in our own lives. And at times like this, I'm particularly glad to be part of this community that tends to value our own personal growing and healing processes in combination with political awareness and action. So I look forward to hearing a bit later in the call if anyone is moved to share how any of you may be experiencing this time, what this week may have been for you, and maybe where you may be finding inspiration, comfort, and motivation for faith and positive action, or just how you're feeling about things. So my thanks to all of you, again, for being part of this community and being part of this call. We have a full agenda, as usual, and I'll start by going over that agenda. In just a few minutes, I'll introduce our special guest, Baz Dreisinger, and after she speaks, we'll have space for questions and discussion with her. And after that, we'll have a few announcements, including a suggested action for this month. We'll hear from members of the Department of Peacebuilding Committee with updates about the bill, the campaign, and maybe more. And next, we'll hear a few words from Terry Mason, a longtime dedicated member of our board of directors. And finally, we'll have space for community sharing. And we'd love to know what's happening in your area or in your peacebuilding life. Now, before I introduce Baz, as usual, I'd like to tell her a little bit about the folks on this call. So there are people on this call from around the country and around the world, really, who promote peacebuilding in their neighborhoods, in their homes, in their hearts, and sometimes in the U.S. Congress. There are people on the call like Lori Draper in Alaska, whose congressman is Don Young. And Don is a pretty far-right Republican and one of the longest-serving members of the U.S. Congress. Congressman Young has held that one Alaska House seat for over 40 years, so his seat is absolutely secure. And Lori and her local team began meeting with Congressman Young's staff around 2006 to promote practical peace-building policies. At that point, it was all about the Department of Peace. And over the last few years, they also got several opinion pieces published in support of these policies, including pieces published promoting the Youth Promise Act. And the Youth Promise Act is youth prison reduction through opportunities, mentoring, intervention, support, and education. It's been one of our top priorities as well. And just this last session, Congressman Young, after several meetings with Lori and her team and seeing these published pieces, which they brought to his attention, he signed on as a co-sponsor of the Youth Promise Act and has become a real champion for that bill. And that bill has now largely been incorporated into the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act, which passed in the House of Representatives just about 6 weeks ago. Lori has also steadfastly supported others throughout our field for the past several years, so anyone else on this call who wants to learn more about her powerful peace-building secrets, she is more than willing to share them via Lori, L-O-R-I, at peacealliance.org. So this is the kind of work that folks in our field are doing, engaging on various levels to clarify and elevate the work of peacebuilding in our schools, in our broader communities, in our justice systems, among our nations, and within ourselves. And we'll be hearing some sharing and announcements from the field later on during this call, but for now, it's my great pleasure to tell you a little bit about our special guest, Baz Dreisinger. Baz is one of the pioneering lights in the world of peace building, working in criminal justice systems both in the U.S. and around the world to bring more restorative approaches and sensibilities into action. While teaching at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, she founded the Prison to College Pipeline, bringing higher education opportunities and the community support that can come along with that into New York prisons. An avid promoter of restorative practices, she then took her research in action around the world, working alongside local activists in prisons from Rwanda to South Africa, Uganda, and Jamaica, to Thailand, Brazil, Australia, Singapore, and Norway, not only learning and writing an inspiring book about this experience, but actively participating in reforming prison practices and policies along the way. Her book, Incarceration Nations, A Journey to Justice in Prisons Around the World, documents how she discovered, created, and seized opportunities to participate in cultural healing and found bright human spirit and possibilities in some of the world's darkest places. I am in the middle of reading it right now myself, and I'll say the writing is brilliant in my view. Not only am I finding inspiring gems on pretty much every page, it has really given me a much more solid understanding of the history of incarceration, how recently mass incarceration has come about, and how malleable this practice is, and how we do have power and plenty of good reasons to make major changes in how we address crime and healing, both in this country and worldwide. So it is truly a gift to have you with us tonight, Baz, and I'm deeply grateful for your work in prisons, classrooms, and in the creation of this book to share your experience and insights with us. So thanks so much for joining us, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dan. That's a beautiful introduction. I'm really moved by that. I take it everyone can hear me okay. This is a wonderful format. It's actually pretty incredible to connect with our comrades and spiritual family members nationwide, especially, as you said, right now when we need this more than ever. And so it's really beautiful to be part of this network tonight. I think probably I'm not alone in saying that the only thing that's kept me sane since the events of last week has been doing the work and being in action. So it's really wonderful to be part of a network that does this on a regular basis. It's great to be here. So I thought what I would do is just tell you, expand a bit more on what I do and then engage in dialogue. I'm certainly someone who prefers to have conversation rather than talk at, so I'll keep my remarks pretty brief. But I got involved in working in the context of prisons actually because I was invited to. I was doing some writing about prisons and pop culture. I've been working as a journalist for about 20 years and writing about all manner of things, music, pop culture, race-related issues, politics, culture, world music. And I started doing some writing around the issue of hip-hop, actually, hip-hop and the criminal justice system. And I got a lot of letters from people in prison about a dozen years ago who invited me inside and I started giving talks, and that led to my starting the Prison to College Pipeline. And the idea behind the Prison to College Pipeline is sort of captured in the name, which is, of course, this idea of reversing the school-to-prison pipeline and creating a scenario whereby education can be at the forefront of people's return to society when they come home. So the essence of the program is that students take classes on the inside, and they take college classes, CUNY college classes, City University of New York, and they're guaranteed a slot in CUNY when they come home. So they will accrue credits on the inside, and then when they come home, they complete their degrees. And the idea behind that is that they sort of get the best of both worlds, getting college credits on the inside, and then becoming part of a community and getting all of the wonderful benefits that come with college education on the outside when they come home. And it's been, the program is now, we're in our sixth year. Thankfully, we just received federal funding as of this past summer. It was announced that we were one of 67 schools chosen to be a Second Chance Pell Grant site. And that's an Obama initiative that restores on an experimental basis Pell Grant funding to college students on the inside in prisons. So hopefully, obviously, there's a lot of tension regarding the continuation of this funding under a Trump administration, but we're just proceeding with full force, as we always do. So it's been, and it's also a very exciting thing, not only because it'll allow us to expand the program dramatically. We'll now be able to move from about, there's a total of about 60 students to a total of about 160 students in prisons all over New York State. And it's also, that's wonderful, but in a sense, what's even more exciting is just this sort of symbolic statement of a federal investment in college education as part of what's so important in keeping people home, in allowing people to reintegrate into society, and also allowing them to not just survive when they come home, but actually achieve the potential that they should have gotten. And I think for me, the essence of the program or the motivation behind the program has been always about not just low recidivism rates and sort of getting people by, but actually allowing people to thrive and achieve what they should have gotten in the first place. So the grant is called a Second Chance Pell Grant, but I think of it as a first chance because so many people, essentially everyone in the prison to college pipeline was not given a fair shot at education to begin with because of poverty and inequality and racism and all of the factors that plague our world. So the prison to college pipeline is sort of what I've been so engaged in for the past 7-8 years, and through that, my book Incarceration Nations came into being, and I became really interested in seeing how the issues that were finding a main stage in our society, in on our side of the world, were starting to trickle down to mainstream discourse in a global context. And so what I wanted to do with Incarceration Nations was travel around to as many countries as was feasible and look at the same issues that I've been thinking about in our context in a global context, and especially think about how some of the, essentially America has foisted incarceration and our approach to dealing with crime by way of incarceration on the world. So I went to the 9 countries that Dan mentioned, beginning in Rwanda and ending in Norway, and tried to focus on very particular issues in each country. That I chose countries that were representative of issues that I wanted to highlight. So I looked at, of course, as Dan mentioned, I'm very much grounded in a restorative justice approach. And so I began in Rwanda and South Africa thinking about restorative justice and thinking about forgiveness and thinking about what a justice system that's grounded in restoration and reparations might look like, as opposed to revenge and harm and punishment, which is what a prison system is. And I looked at many, and then I went on from there to look at other issues like the arts in prison in Uganda and Jamaica, solitary confinement in Brazil, private prisons in Australia, which has the highest percentage of people in private prisons in the world, and reentry in Singapore, women incarceration, the incarceration of women, the fastest growing prison population globally speaking, and certainly here in the U.S. I looked at that in Thailand, and then Norway to look at the quote unquote model prisons, the open prisons of Norway, and think about those as a model for justice. And so going forward, I'm still very much invested. Of course, the Prison to College Pipeline absorbs a lot of my time and the work that I do. I'm very interested in seeing it grow in a global context too. I've had conversations with South Africa, and I'm currently working with the government of Jamaica and University of the West Indies in Jamaica to bring versions of it over there. So starting with those two countries, I think there's a lot of possibility for there to be versions of the Prison to College Pipeline globally speaking. And I'm also interested more broadly in developing a foundation that kind of acts as a global consulting group, utilizing some of the wisdom that exists on our shores in terms of reducing prison populations, creating safer communities, creating safer prisons where they do have to exist, and being kind of for hire by governments who are interested in doing that. Because since the book has come out, I've gotten a lot of inquiries along those lines, and certainly I myself I'm not equipped to solve the problems of all of these these countries that are interested in trying to address the prison crisis. But I know there are so many people, including many people on this call, I'm sure, who are invested and interested in doing that. And then lastly, I'm really interested, again, in connecting the dots, globally speaking, thinking about our struggle in this country and how we can be involved in struggles globally. And so my interest is in how can we get that out there. And so I've always worked in a variety of mediums. So right now I'm working with some really wonderful directors and producers, the director of a film called Solitary, which everyone should see. It's about solitary confinement, of course, and it's set in a prison in Virginia. Just came out. It aired on HBO. It will air on HBO later this month. It's a really powerful film. She and I are partnering to create a docuseries based on Incarceration Nations that will bring the plight of a lot of these prisons and international situations really globally so that people have the chance to understand, again, to connect the dots, to realize that our struggle here is connected to a global struggle. And also, there are lots of possibilities for solutions. One of the things that I really tried to do with the book was not simply go out there and indict other nations, but look at the possibilities for growth and reform that are coming from unexpected places. And that if we really kind of put our global heads together, we can come up with a solution to this mess and think innovatively and use our imagination to recreate the crime and justice front more generally. So I'll stop there and take comments and thoughts.
So such wonderful, powerful work, Bez. Thank you. I really appreciate hearing about it, and I'm so glad that you joined us and were able to share so much of this. Folks who want to raise a question or offer a comment, just press 1 on your telephone keypad, and that'll be virtually raising your hand, and I'll be able to recognize you and call on you. So just press 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question or a comment for Bez. I can kind of start the ball rolling a little bit because, as you know, you and I have spoken a couple of times. I'm really intrigued and excited about this idea of a consulting entity that you're talking about creating that would be available to have more of this kind of influence and dialogue. And I'm curious about, what sort of folks would you cooperate with in terms of people in the field here in the U.S., people in the field around the world? If you were contacted by a government, say in Brazil, for example, do you have a sense of who your allies would have to be moving forward, or would you sort of go more or less on your own? Do you have a sense of structure or possibility about what kind of a team approach you might have, or is it more bringing your own perspective and your own tools to the table? Anything along those lines?
Yeah, so it's definitely, it's a work in progress, absolutely. So I'm still thinking about this very actively. It's definitely not me. It's definitely a collaborative effort, and I think about people here in the U.S. who are at the forefront of these issues and doing, really colleagues of mine who I know that are doing work in various areas. So I think what would have to happen is that a government or a country would have to say, these are our main concerns. And I think for some, there's issues of, for instance, TB in prisons and health concerns and drug addiction and the war on drugs. And so I would turn to people here who are doing really progressive work in that area. For others, it might be how can we develop our education programs more fully? And that's an area that I know more about. But I think really actually this idea came about mostly because here I am in the field doing this work alongside people whom I have so much respect for, who I think are doing enormously progressive work in areas related to public health and prisons, areas related to prosecution and how to make our prosecutory system more, more fair, more just. people who are dealing with prison and overcrowding and how to create better programming in the context of that. So I think of it as turning to people alongside here. I mean, it's sort of a schizophrenic time. There's so much that's horrifying that's happening, but I also feel like doing this work, I'm consistently surrounded by incredibly progressive minds and who would be of great value in an international context too. So my starting point is really kind of, you know, the people that I'm working alongside, my comrades, my colleagues in the work. I also think one of the great revelations of writing Incarceration Nations and actually continuing to do the work, I was just in Indonesia 2 weeks ago and met some people there too, is that everywhere that I've been, there are progressive minds and there are people laboring to do the work, even in a culture that is so antithetical to their progressive work. So it's also about, it's not just about taking the American thinking and projecting it on people, but tapping into what is already happening in these countries.
Beautiful. I love all that. It's a very inspiring picture. So we have a couple of folks with raised hands, and just to remind the rest of you, if you want to ask a question, just press 1 on your keypad, and I'll start with Nancy Merritt all the way across the country. Go ahead, Nancy, your mic is live.
Okay, how are you? Thank you very much for the work you're doing. It's just very important, and I appreciate hearing about it. I don't know if you've know about in the San Francisco Bay Area at San Quentin, they've had a program for quite a number of years where people can earn college degrees or college credits while they're in prison, and it's made a really, really big difference. We had a guest speaker on one of our calls who has been going into the prison for years doing teaching. And so it's academic courses, but also teaching things like art courses and working with the Buddhist community on meditation courses and things like that. And she worked with them. We have a thing here called the Japanese Lantern Ceremony around the time of Hiroshima and Nagasaki days. And she worked with the prisoners to do some art projects and brought them to that lantern ceremony, so they felt very connected with the outside world in at least that one small way. So I just thank you for what you're doing. I guess another thing she pointed out was that San Quentin is a little unique because it's in a rural area and they have a lot of groups who come in and help. It's in an urban area, and prisons that are in rural areas don't get so much support from the community. Mm. So I don't know if you've found that or not, but that was what she was finding.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I know very well about the excellent San Quentin program, and know many of the people involved in it, I think California is a really interesting place right now and an exciting place in terms of justice work for so many reasons, one of which being what's about to be the explosion of college programs, because for so many years that San Quentin program was the only in-person college program. There were other ones, but they were kind of quasi-online or correspondence, and there's now many programs that are being developed and supported thanks to a Ford Foundation grant and a number of projects that are happening, which is great, because I actually don't think anything can substitute for the presence of a human being in terms of impacting people, and I think that across the board, but certainly when it comes to education. So I think I'm watching California very closely on so many fronts. And of course, you know, the realignment has been in California has been, it's like crisis becomes opportunity. And so there's so many things happening on that front. And definitely, I think with prisons in general around the country, there tends to be a very problematic gap between the haves and the have-nots. those that happen to be close to either wealthy communities or communities, period, tend to be far better service than others. And this is true in New York State. It's true in so many places. And it's one of the things that we have to be conscious of as we do the work, is to make sure that it's not happenstance of geography that gets you better serviced, that the work is happening across the board.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nancy. Yeah, thank you, Nancy. That's so interesting that there are different classes of prison experience relative to the surrounding communities. It hadn't occurred to me very much. I see we have another question from Stephanie Salter in Atlanta, I believe. Go ahead, Stephanie. Your mic is open.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining our call and sharing so much information about the program. My question was, I'm in Georgia, and there's very rare programs that I've heard of, like Prison to College Pipeline Program. Would you have any advice or first steps for how to possibly get started in a program, particularly, you know, for that program here in some of these prisons? Or do you see your program, Prison to College Pipeline, expanding and starting to be open to other prisons throughout the U.S. and globally?
Great question. So I would say we're definitely interested in thinking nationally, but I think one of the things that you should do is check. I can't remember offhand, but the Second Chance Pell Initiative is a nationwide effort. And so there are definitely Georgia schools that are involved in that. So if you, I don't know the website offhand, but if you Google it, you can easily find the various sites. And there are certainly ones in Georgia that are engaged in that. And so either most of the programs in the Second Chance Pell Grant Act are actually ones like the Prison to College Pipeline that have been doing this for a number of years already. There are a couple of new ones, but most of them are ones that, again, have been doing the work. So if you if you take a look at what those sites are in Georgia, then you'll locate at least a few schools. And given, you know, Atlanta's prominence, I'm sure at least one of those schools is in Atlanta. So my attitude around this is always see what's being done already before, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We can see what's being done and take it from there. So I'd start there. And I'm pretty confident, given, you know, how many incredible higher programs of higher education there are in Georgia and in Atlanta in particular, that you'll find someone who's doing the work.
Okay,
and you can
great.
Align with them. I think what's interesting now is that we're at a moment where there's a lot of expansion in this work and also a lot of innovation. So there's a lot of different models. I mean, the Prison to College Pipeline is one that's particularly geared toward reentry, right? Start on the inside, complete on the outside. But there are other models that are degree granting inside, and that, you know, some are more kind of vocational or tech oriented, and some are more liberal arts oriented. And I think that's great, because really, like, what we need is, just like on the outside, people have options, they have choices. Not one model of school is not going to make sense for everyone. So I think what you'll find if you dig around a little bit is that there are a lot of different models, and just like there are a lot of different people in prison with different futures and different game plans, you know. So I think that's a really excellent thing.
All right, thank you so much.
Great. So there are no more hands raised currently, so if you were thinking you'd have to wait in line, it's not the case. Go ahead and raise a hand. I can imagine that there's so much that's just astounding and impressive about this work, and you know, maybe it's tricky to even feel kind of a bridge to how you would support it and how you would look into it. I want to at least plug Baz's book one more time, which is Incarceration Nations. Again, it talks about the background of the development of incarceration, of mass incarceration, as a cure for crime, apparently. And maybe, Baz, maybe you'd like to say a couple of words about this historically, because this really hit home for me more than it had in all the other stuff I've read, how it was really not until the U.S. developed this approach that people thought locking somebody up was actually going to be a response to a crime, that was not thought of as a healing or preventative measure until the U.S. really started doing it as a remedy for crime. Would you speak to that a little bit? Because that really might enlighten folks the way that it did me.
Sure, yeah. I think, well, for a lot of people, a lot of people kind of take the notion of prison for granted, like, oh, that's just sort of always the way that we've dealt with crime. But I think what was a great revelation to me in doing the research for Incarceration Nations, and is a revelation to so many people, is that, in fact, prisons are a relatively recent invention, that about 200 years ago, there started to be European ideas about not responding to crime with physical punishment and banishment, and instead developing these things called penitentiaries. And some of the thinkers in France and England were floating these ideas around, and ultimately, America was coming into being around that time and decided to enact these theories and built the first two modern prisons that were Eastern State Penitentiary in Pennsylvania and Auburn in New York. And they were, one of them, Eastern, was built on a kind of solitary confinement model, modeled after, again, penitentiary was modeled after a monastery. If you lock people in a room with a Bible, they will get better. And then Auburn, which is in New York, And Auburn was built on a capitalism model. It looked very much like a modern factory. It was almost slavery in a capitalistic kind of factory-like format. And America built these two modern prisons. And then essentially, in a nutshell, you had leaders coming from around the world to look at them and then carry those models back. And that led to, and then through colonialism, it spread even further than that. So you had England coming, and that meant many, many colonies. So actually, when I went on trips around the world for Incarceration Nations, I would go to Uganda and see a prison that looked very much like Eastern, or Rwanda, pull up in Brazil and see a Supermax prison that's modeled after our own, because after we foisted that original model on the world, we then foisted the idea of the Supermax, the idea of private prisons. So the theme for prisons and the world has really been that America has innovated and the rest of the world has copycatted. And obviously, and that is to devastating results. And it is a pretty incredible thing to see, to witness firsthand, to see versions of what we've created in really far-flung parts of the world, as if it's the only response to harm and to crime, which I think we all know it isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I found that myself. I found that kind of empowering to learn that this was a pretty recent development. It was something that people just tossed this idea around and went ahead and built it, and we've got pretty good evidence at this point that there are much more effective ways of dealing with social harm, with interpersonal conflict and harm. So I think what it says to me is it's largely in our hands to work and make those changes.
Definitely. I'm glad you see it so optimistically, because I think for a lot of people it's devastating, and I actually see it exactly the same way. If something was born that recently, it can be undone.
Exactly. Great. Well, we're about out of time for this section. And again, I so thank you, Baz, for joining us. I think this is a great gift. And this recording will be available on our website for any folks who are on the call right now and will want to hear it again or recommend it to other folks. Or Baz, if you wanted to make it available to anybody else, I'll be happy to provide the link to you. And you're welcome to stay for the rest of the call. There'll be a variety of things going on. But of course, if you have other things happening and need to leave us, we totally understand. But thanks again for sharing your insights and just a description of this powerful work, which I think will inspire lots of folks throughout the country to keep on working and learning and making these changes.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
Okay. So next, I want to introduce one of our wonderful board members, Terry Mason, who's going to share a couple of words with y'all. And Terry has been a board member and a California State Coordinator for over a decade now, both, I believe. Has just been a real wonderful support to people, myself included, throughout the country who are working with the Peace Alliance and working to keep it alive and keep it thriving and keep it creative and innovating along the way. So just such a wonderful heart and brilliant mind, and I really appreciate her in so many ways. So I'm happy to present her to you. Welcome, Terry.
Hello, everyone. It's so good to be here. And I'm so grateful to Boz for the work she's doing and sharing with us tonight. That was so inspiring and wonderful to hear. You know, there's so much good work going on in the world, and every speaker we have on these calls just gives me so much, not only hope, but it just fills me up. I just feel all of the good energy that exists and it's growing and living and breathing around us. It's so exciting. This has been a week, as Dan mentioned at the beginning. Most of the country, I think, has been on a roller coaster, no matter what your political views and persuasion. One main point is clear, that as a country, we are very divided in our worldviews. The reactions of people across the country and across the world, actually, range widely, and emotions are very high. This, to me, though, is an indicator of passion and investment in the world we live in, and that is a strength that each one of us can draw upon. The work that we do in the Peace Alliance is tied to all five of the cornerstones, is to find common ground and to build upon that to more peaceful communities and a more peaceful world. Peace, by the way, is not passive in this context. It is a vibrant and active concept for all of us to wrap ourselves around and to strive to live within. Peace building is an action. It's an action that each one of us can take every day as we walk through our lives, even in the smallest ways, in the ways we interact with the people all through our days. Excuse me. The Shift Network event held this weekend, pardon me, that was co-sponsored by the Peace Alliance, was called A Day of Healing and Reconciliation. Pardon me, 1 second. It was called Day of Healing and Reconciliation, Reuniting Our Country After the Election. And I don't know how many of you on the call were able to attend, but I was able to attend. And I'm telling you, through music and spoken word and poem and words spoken by many faith, educational, and political leaders, the event was focused on allowing each one of us to find our way back to a place where we can move forward together. And as all of you may or may not know, the Peace Alliance is going through a transformation as well. We are exploring different ways of moving forward, and we'll be sending a very important survey to all of our database very shortly, within the next few days. And it's very important. We really request the board and the staff, we request that each of you complete it so that we can understand your thoughts and ideas about the organization, both past and future, so that we can craft our way forward with the input of all of you that are so important to us and so engaged and so involved. We're looking for creative ways and innovative ways to move forward as an organization. We've considered having a leadership council so that we have key volunteers across the country holding different positions within the leadership group instead of having a single managing director. We're also open to the possibility of having another managing director. So we're open to a lot of different ideas, and we really would appreciate your input. So when you get that survey in the email, please do take some time to fill it out. It's really important to us to hear from you. But I just want to say bless all of you, bless all of us for being here, for staying engaged, for being here, and living the questions and being willing to move forward and being embracing the future. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much, Terry. Pleasure to hear from you, and I'm really glad that you were able to join us tonight. I think it makes a big difference to me and probably to a lot of folks on the call. So thank you. Okay, so next I have just a quick announcement or two, and then we're going to hear from one or two folks on the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. We mentioned last month that the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act had passed in the House, and it included many major provisions of the Youth Promise Act. For those of you who are a little bit newer to our organization, the Youth Promise Act, as I mentioned to Baz, is youth prison reduction through opportunities, mentoring, intervention, support, and education. It's a powerful bill that we've been working for a few years, and now it's largely passed in the House, and it provides a mechanism for communities to identify best practices for reducing youth violence and reducing youth incarceration, and then to create wraparound service programs to bring that into being. So this is really a prime opportunity. There's still a couple of months in this legislative session. I'm going to suggest that a sensible action is the same thing that I asked or suggested last month, is to go ahead and contact your senators. So the JJDPA has passed the House. It is not yet passed in the Senate. We want to bring that bill to the floor, and we want it to include the Youth Promise Act provisions, the same Youth Promise Act provisions that are in the House version. So there's no action sheet for this. It's this simple. Just please email or call your senators, especially if they happen to be on the Judiciary Committee, but do it anyway. Do it for all of your senators and ask them to bring the JJDPA, the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act, to the floor of the Senate for a vote. The bill's number is S1169. So there you have it. If you have questions about that, I'll ask you, you can raise them during the community comment period, the community sharing period, because I want to go ahead and introduce folks from our DOP committee. So I believe it's going to be a combination, again, of Karen Johnson and Nancy Merritt, or one or the other of them, two of our peacebuilding field champions. Nancy is our California State Coordinator, and Karen is a Chicago Area Action Team Leader, and they are both members of the very powerful Department of Peacebuilding Committee. So let me take a moment to unmute them. Nancy, you're unmuted, and Karen, you're unmuted, and I leave it up to you who's going to talk first or who's going to talk.
Karen, do you want to go first?
Okay, sure. Thanks, Nancy. I'm just going to mention relatively quickly a book that I think we mentioned on a previous call, We Need the Department of Peace, Everybody's Business, Nobody's Job, that we on the Department of Peace Committee just learned of this summer because one of the authors was featured on the Ralph Nader Show, and they talked about a Department of Peace. So it has the history through the 20th century. It doesn't have the current bill in there or anything in the 21st century. So we've been in communication with the authors about getting the current legislation documented and presented in some way. It may be in a future reprint as the first or last chapter, but we're still working that out. But it is on Amazon.com, and one of our committee members said, you know, I'm going to give these out for Christmas and put an insert in there. So we're going to be making up an insert and putting it on the Department of Peacebuilding page so people can adapt it for themselves if they want to go ahead and pick up copies and spread the word in that way. So it's We Need a Department of Peace, Everybody's Business, Nobody's Job, the History from the 1770s through the 20th century. And that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, the big, probably the biggest news is that we have now submitted our proposed updates for the Department of Peacebuilding Bill 2017. As most of you probably know, since 2013, Congresswoman Barbara Lee has asked us or invited us to participate in rewriting or updating the bill. And we're actually the ones who are responsible for it now being called Department of Peacebuilding. So we got our rewrites in on Monday. I was kind of doing this all during the election and sort of trying to recover from the election, and it's actually one thing that helped me stay somewhat sane. I won't say I'm sane, but somewhat sane. So a lot of what we updated was, for those who are not familiar with the bill, there's a finding section in the first part of it, and a lot of that sets out facts. We updated some of those facts. One fact we added, which we don't know if she'll accept it or not, but one sentence we added, which is astonishing to me, is the United States has been at peace for only 21 entire years since the Revolutionary War. Shocking, I think. We added some stronger language about human slavery and human trafficking. We added more language about guns, gun violence, and veteran suicides. We added a little bit about the United Nations just adopted 17 sustainable development goals for the next few years, and that includes promoting peace building and inclusive societies. So we added some language about that. Let's see, what are some other highlights? Trying to find the part that we added about prisons that was kind of relevant to what we just talked about. Oh, we added a very revolutionary word that's never been in this bill before, under the Office of Peace Education and Training. It used to say teaching and fostering compassion, empathy, tolerance, respect, inclusion, and forgiveness. We added a four-letter word called love. We'll see if she goes with that. We added something called develop new policies and build upon existing proven programs to prevent the school-to-prison pipeline by promoting restorative and conflict resolution practices in pre-kindergarten, elementary, secondary, university, and postgraduate levels, and in police academies with funding for teacher training and nonviolence, et cetera, et cetera. So those are some of the highlights. As I said, it's up to Barbara Lee what she does and doesn't accept, but in the past she has incorporated usually a really high percent, probably around 80% of what we suggest. So we'll see how that goes. We also got a new co-sponsor, Eddie Bernice Johnson from Texas, and I was looking at the election results, and we will be losing 8 co-sponsors because of elections or retirement or whatever. So as we all know, it's a it's a continuing process, but we still have, you know, assuming we got all the others back on, we still have a pretty good basic core group of co-sponsors. So that's my wrap about that. And that, I'll leave it at that. We have other stuff, but we probably need time for other people.
That's the great stuff, Nancy. Thank you. Can you guys hear me okay? Nancy and Karen, your mics are still open. Can you hear me all right?
I can, yes.
Okay.
Yes,
good.
I can hear you.
Good. I got a text from Laurie asking if I dropped off, so I was wondering if you could hear me. No, I'm still here. That is so inspiring. I just so appreciate being part of the work that you guys are doing in a small way, just by hearing about it and being in support of it. You've probably heard the sort of self-help technique, like if you want to get something done, write it down. You know, if you have a goal that you want to accomplish, write it down, make it clear and black and white. So to hear the kind of things that you all are bringing into this legislation, putting in black and white, saying we'd like to see restorative and conflict resolution oriented education in pre-K, kindergarten, secondary, et cetera. That's what we want to see, and we're putting it in black and white and putting it at the level of plans and strategy. So I'm very grateful for all the work that you all have done and continue to do. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks for sharing about it with us.
I guess I can't resist adding one more thing. The group called World, many of you have probably seen their website, but World Beyond War is circulating a petition saying no more war. We call on, and this was to whoever became the next president, we call on you to end perpetual war by the United States government. And as signers, we commit ourselves to building nonviolent pressure to end continual U.S. warfare. We also reject our country's bloated military spending and mass arms sales that make the USA the world's leading arms trafficker by a huge margin. Hundreds probably of organizations have now signed on to this. Our California Department of Peace group signed on, and our National Department of Peace Building Committee signed on. And I urge any of you who work with other groups to have them look at it and see if this is something they can get behind.
Wonderful. Is it fair to say if people have questions or want to contact you about any of this, they can reach you via nancy@peacealliance.org?
Yes.
Terrific. nancy@peacealliance.org.
Oh, Dan,
and we will have. Go ahead.
I just want to add one more thing. We have a monthly Department of Peacebuilding campaign call, and it's coming up this Monday night at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. And on the Department of Peacebuilding page of the Peace Alliance website, there's a link to the registration link if anybody wants to join us on those calls. Third Mondays every month.
Perfect. Perfect. So on the Peace Alliance website, you all probably know peacealliance.org. There's a Department of Peacebuilding page. And on that page is a link to register for that call. Great. So I'd love to open this up for discussion and questions for each other or for me, and anything that you'd like to share about how you've been coping with this past week in the world or peacebuilding work that you're engaged in, where you are, you can press 1 on your keypad, and I'll recognize you and call on you. And maybe keep it to, somewhere around 2 minutes, probably would be a good ballpark figure. So, just press 1 on your keypad, and I will call on you. And I can see a handful of hands going up. Let's start, again, with Stephanie Salter in Atlanta. Go ahead, Stephanie. Your mic is open.
Wonderful. This has been a wonderful call, very inspiring for sure, and I've definitely been staying abreast about the Department of Peacebuilding and that legislation and rewriting, and it's just some wonderful piece of work, and I'm really excited to be a part of that as well. I just wanted to talk about what the projects we're doing right now in the Atlanta area. I am the SDG leader for Urban Economic Sustainability Committee for the United Nations here in Atlanta, and I'm committed to Goal 11. So we are having our Members' Day, which is December 10th, which is also Human Rights Day, where all of the committee members from, Global Health Committee, Environmental Sustainability Committee, Peace and Security Committees are coming together to talk more about just the United Nations goals and the plans that our committees will achieve those goals within this year. For the Urban Economic Sustainability Committee, we will be focusing on and working with the mayor of Clarkston to do a speaking engagement to talk more about Goal 11 and bring awareness about Goal 11. The mayor of Clarkston is Ted Turner, and he's doing some wonderful things in that city that really focus on the UN's goal of sustaining cities. So we'll have more information about that event that's coming up. It's also a city that holds a lot of refugees. And so we'll be discussing different things like employment, environmental sustainability, affordable housing for the refugees, and bringing some of those other committees together to focus on that city and see some of the wonderful things that they are doing in that city. So also, we are doing a push right now for email blast through our senators here, Senator Perdue and Senator Isaacson, to have them to support the Youth Promised Act. And we are coordinating now efforts for different email blasts and awareness events for that. So I'll definitely have more of that information, and you guys can reach out to me if you want to. I mean, if you know anybody in the Atlanta area that would be, interested in being a part of any of the either United Nations committees or promoting the email blast with the senators.
Wonderful stuff, Stephanie. Thank you. And I didn't mention that Stephanie and I have been in contact the last 6 or 8 weeks, and she found us, came to us through the website, and is excited about being a new Peace Alliance leader in the Atlanta area. So I'm getting ready to prep an e-blast to go out to probably to all of Georgia to let them know that there's a really fired up new Peace Alliance leader in the Atlanta area who wants to develop some more campaign work and strategies, and it's just been a pleasure to be cooperating with you, Stephanie. So welcome aboard.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, a few other hands. Let's see. Steve Drucker. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, I'm a woman named Steve, so don't be surprised. I'm from Sherrard, Illinois. I worked very hard in this campaign, and I was devastated by the results. And doing a lot of peace building inside of myself, being a more introvert type of person, I read a lot of things online about get back in the saddle and jump right back in, and I can't do that. I need to grieve, and I need more time than other than some extroverts. And I think we need both. We need to grieve privately and with one another. And when we're ready to get back in the saddle, and I'm making lists of things I want to do, but I'm not forcing myself to do anything before my heart and soul are ready, doing a lot of self-care. And I'm looking up how does an oyster make a pearl, because it seems like a metaphor to me that an irritant is introduced into an oyster's shell, and it starts gradually to cover it over with this coating, which eventually turns it into a beautiful thing. And I think someone said earlier to take a crisis and turn it into an opportunity and turn it into something wonderful. So I'm very grateful for the Peace Alliance, and I want to get more involved with it and learn more from it. And I hope that everyone will take the time that we need to make more peace and healing within us, as well as doing all these wonderful external projects. So that's my 2 cents worth.
Wonderful. If I may say my evaluation is I really appreciate that, and thank you for that reminder. I certainly honor you for honoring your own process and self-care. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we probably just about have time for a couple more hands that are up. If it can be pretty brief, there's one. I see Kathy. I don't see your last name. Go ahead, Kathy. Kathy, are you still with us? Let's pass for now.
Maybe my phone.
Oh, there you are. Your phone was muted. Yeah,
hear
you now. Yeah, hi, Kathy.
I'm in Houston, Texas, and I just am very pleased and honored to be listening in on all of the reflections and the actions that everyone's doing. I do work right in the middle of one of the highest immigrant zones in the nation and work in high poverty schools. And our children and families have been incredibly upset and incredibly fearful after the election. A lot of people feel that this that it's just all, like, half of America is supporting somebody who is very hateful and racist. And it's not an easy thing to find peace in that kind of an environment. That said, the children in the schools and the teachers are doing incredible work. And I think we have a huge opportunity to really learn from this and heal. I was able to go to the Center for the Healing of Racism here in Houston recently, and it was incredible just to be among such a diverse group and hear everybody honor each other and the steps forward. So I think it's important to know that this work that's happening to help people understand what's happening is super important, and to help people find peaceful, constructive responses is going to be super important as we move forward. So that's, for what it's worth, that's what I'm living here in Houston.
Thank you, Kathy. We are all walking these roads and doing the best we can. It's again, glad to be sharing this space. We are technically at the top of the hour. I think I'm going to take the liberty of asking us to stick around for just another minute or so we can hear from the last person who has her hand raised, and that's Cheryl Kaplan. Cheryl, can you give it to us in about a minute?
Yes, I think I can, Dan.
Hi, hon.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay. I went to a luncheon and sat right with Ted Yoho, who had just won a re-election. And I talked to him about the YPA. And he basically said, you know, let's get through the beginning of this next month before we start pushing on the Senate. And so my question is, when do we, he thought that we might have to start all over, so I wanted to chat with you about that. Do we have to start all over very soon? Or how soon do we need to start fighting again?
Well, my feeling is we still have a chance in this session, that the session is not over, that Congress can still do some business, and it's gone all the way through the House. So many of you already have some relationship with your senators and your senators' offices. I say stay in touch with them, get connected with them, and see if we can get that version of the JJDPA through the Senate before the session is over. All they can say is no. You know, there's a possibility that they'll say we don't have time. There's not enough working days. We won't be able to do it. But you can let them know that you care, that you're there, and we've come so far to get it all the way through the House. I would like to see us keep pushing, keep in contact through the session, and then if it doesn't pass, it'll have to be reintroduced. It'll be reintroduced sometime in the late winter, early spring. And we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But for now, the session is technically still open. It'll be open until the Christmas break. So I think go ahead forward. Stay in contact. Let them know that even with whatever else is going on in the world, these opportunities to reduce incarceration among young people and reduce violence among young people through this very bipartisan effort that's moved forward through this session, that we really want to see that followed through on, and we want them to stand up for that. So give them something productive to do in the last couple of months of the session.
Okay, well,
that's
he knows that I'm a fuss. I'm a fussy person, so I'm going to fuss with him.
Okay. Well,
anyway,
I mean, a lot of his work is done. Thank you, Cheryl. A lot of his work is done through the house.
But our work is not done. Our work is not done.
Yeah. Great. All right. Well, we're 4 minutes over. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you all. And I really appreciate y'all showing up and putting your heads and hearts together as we face whatever comes next and try to find constructive paths. I think the work will remain. I have my own work to do, interior and exterior, and I trust you all do too, of whatever shape it is. Sometimes it might look like a nap. So I will wish you all a beautiful evening and a beautiful month. And if you have any questions or comments, you can reach me, Dan@peacealliance.org. You can reach Lori, L-O-R-I, Lori@peacealliance.org. You can contact Nancy@peacealliance.org regarding the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. And again, I wish you all a beautiful night, and I will open up your mics so that you can say good evening or whatever you'd like to say to each other. Goodbye, all.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.